From KUER News in Salt Lake City, this is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. In a new documentary film, Mitchell Kezin says for years he had a secret.
It used to be something I couldn't even acknowledge. It used to be something I couldn't talk about.
Ooh, very nice.
I mean, who wants to acknowledge to people that you love Christmas music?
Yep, Christmas music. Mitchell collects it, goes to flea markets and vintage record shops. And he's not really looking for kitsch or trying to be ironic. He likes Christmas music. The reason is interesting and personal, and in the film he made, he goes looking for people just like him. Today in the program, we continue our series on documentary film. We're talking with Mitchell Kezin about the incredible variety of Christmas music and the variety of people who love it. Jingle Bell Rocks, after the news.
Hi, this is Benjamin Bombard, one of the producers of Radio West. Our online audio and podcasts are made possible by KUER and its listeners. If you like Radio West, help us make it happen. Become a sustaining member of KUER for as little as $5 a month. You can do that online at KUER.org. And thanks.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. So when I tell you about Mitchell Kezin's new documentary film, how it's about Christmas music and the people who collect it, some of you are going to roll your eyes. And maybe it's not exactly your go-to genre of music. That's cool. And some of you are going to think the film is, you know, an ironic homage to kitsch. And there might be some of that in the film, but really the people that you meet, including Mitchell himself, actually do love Christmas music for many different reasons. They go searching for it, they play it, they make compilation tapes. So today in the program, we're continuing our series on documentary film, our partnership with the Utah Film Center, by talking about Mitchell Kezin's film. We're going to be screening it next week. It's called Jingle Bell Rocks. Mitchell Kezin is a filmmaker based in Vancouver. He's created two shorts, a feature drama called Hero, which premiered at the Montreal World Film Festival. Jingle Bell Rocks is his first documentary feature, and he's joining us today from the studios of member station WCPN, IdeaStream in Cleveland, where he's on film tour. And Mitchell Kezin, welcome to you. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you for having me. We just had a fabulous screening at the Rock Hall of Fame last night.
So how are people reacting? I mean, because I want to get a sense of how people are reacting to some of the funny songs and some of the really touching songs. I mean, it's all over the map. How do people react?
Well, people are generally really kind of, I think, overwhelmed. It's a much more deeply emotional journey and story than would appear on the surface when you're looking or reading a synopsis of the film. My own attachment to this music and how that all developed and where it came from is the thread and the spine of the film.
Yeah.
And then around that, we speak to the origins of 12 of my most favorite alternative, lesser known or completely unknown Christmas songs. And we meet collectors and people in the music business, and we talk about the history of the genre, but from a particularly alternative perspective.
Yeah. Well, I want to get to all of that, actually, as we go along. But I wanted to start with that personal thread in the film. Did you know that this is what you wanted to do at first? Did you know that, okay, I feel really personally connected to this because of one particular song, and so I want to tell a personal story, or did you think it might be something else at first?
Great question. No, in fact, at first, the origins of where this whole movie came from was an article in a now defunct Seattle magazine called Cool Strange Music, which was a little zine about underground esoteric music. And it was an article on Christmas collectors, and apparently there were some legends in this realm. And that was a huge surprise to me. I thought I was the only weirdo still in the Christmas closet, as I say in the film, collecting all this stuff and not knowing quite what to do with it. And when I discovered that there were others in this subculture, I thought I would make a film kind of about them exclusively, and we would hear about the weirdest of the weird. And let me tell you, it gets pretty dark and pretty strange and pretty wacky the deeper you dig.
Yeah.
And so it was going to be a very small, modest little, quite a strange little film. But then I started thinking about my own connection to the music and some of the songs that mattered the most to me, and primarily the Miles Davis, Bob Doro song Blue Xmas to Whom It May Concern, and I realized what I really wanted to do was speak to the artists and the songwriters and the people behind these songs. And that became, obviously, then a much more ambitious film.
I want to back up even before that, because the you really kind of trace where your obsession with Christmas music came from. And you say it started with this this Nat King Cole Christmas song, The Little Boy That Santa Claus Forgot. Start us out there, if you would. I want to play a little bit of this song here in a moment, but set this up for us, because this this was really, I guess, where it all started for you in some ways?
Absolutely. That was a unique record that we had in our family's collection. You know, we had the Elvis Presley Christmas and the Andy Williams and all the standards that you expect to own, Living Strings. And this one was by Nat King Cole, and it's called The Magic of Christmas with Children. It has a whole bunch of different really odd little songs, like Mrs. Santa Claus and I'm the Happiest Christmas Tree. But the song that struck a chord with me and really had kind of an overwhelming effect on me as a five-year-old boy when I first heard it was that song, The Little Boy That Santa Claus Forgot, which tells the story. It's a very somber song about a little boy who doesn't have a father. And as a result of that fact, he's left alone at Christmas time. Santa decides to pass him by. He has to cope with having last year's broken toys. And the idea of Santa not coming to visit you was terrifying to me.
Right.
So there was that. But the other thing was my father and my mother did not have a great relationship. And especially at Christmas time, my father would be absent for a long periods of time. And it was up to my mother to make a Christmas special for the four children. And at the time, there were only two kids. But I really was quite emotionally affected by that song. And the way that Nat sings it, there's these spoken word stanzas. And it felt like he was... I didn't understand that it was recording.
Right.
I thought he was this man.
Because you were a kid.
I was a kid, and I thought there was this man who understood what I was going through with my own dad, and that he was speaking about my story. And so I used to ask my mother to play the record over and over again, hoping that the next time I'd hear it, the story would change, and the boy's father, my father, would return, and Christmas would be wonderful again, and Santa would come and visit, and everything would be okay. Of course, it never worked out that way, and... I was at both haunted by the song, but also so attached to it and needing to hear it constantly through the holidays. It drove my mother crazy. Just trying to understand why he seemed to have this omniscient perspective on my life and my experience, and how could I change that? How could I make things better?
Let's play a little bit of that, if we could, Nat King Cole's song. Yeah, let's just play a bit, because I want to get people to have a sense of it.
Great.
He's the little boy that Santa Claus forgot, and goodness knows he didn't want a lot. He sent a note to Santa for some soldiers and a drum. It broke his little heart when he found Santa hadn't come. In the street he envies all those lucky boys, then wanders home to last year's broken toys. I'm so sorry for that laddie, he hasn't got a daddy. The little boy that Santa Claus forgot.
That, when you hear it even now, I mean, you've heard it so much, does it still make a connection to you? Hearing it now.
Oh, absolutely. It's so vivid. It's such a powerful emotional connection to that song. I mean, it's different now.
Yeah.
Having had the experience with the film, and I don't want to give away how the film ends because it's
good.
A pretty amazing climax. But
yeah, it is.
As a result of that and that journey, my feelings about the song have come full circle, and I'm now pretty okay with it. But there were years, you know, it sounds so silly to say as a man of my age, but there were years where I could barely play that tune. It was tough.
Yeah.
You know, that's just the power, you know, the power speaks to the power of music and memory and magic and all of that.
Well, isn't this one Christmas? Of the things that the film is about is that I think you've put it this way, you want this idea of reclaiming music. I mean, that was an important thing for you.
Absolutely. I consider myself and the more hardcore collectors who are much more active than me to be sort of like the Alan Lomaxes of Christmas underworld. They're the preservationists. They're the ones who are discovering or rediscovering these songs that are sitting in dustbins and church basements and flea markets and bringing them, you know, to the public, sharing them with their compilations, sharing them for free on various music blogs and keeping those songs alive and creating a world where we're not just, you know, hearing the same 30 classic chestnuts over and over again ad nauseum. It was really important to me to feature those guys, and sadly, it's pretty much a man's game, this whole record collecting business, it seems, although it's been refreshing as I've been on tour with the film to meet quite a few women who have come out and said, I collect it too. So
yeah.
So I made that's been nice. But it's an important thing to me and to them.
This Nat King Cole song was important to you. And you say that the way the holiday was being celebrated wasn't really reflected in the music that you had been hearing. And then you heard the Bob Dorough song that you mentioned. It was on an album, a Miles Davis album called, Blue Xmas. I guess that's the name of it, right?
May I tell you?
Yeah, of course.
So it's a compilation record released by Columbia Records in 1962 called Jingle Bell Jazz.
Yeah.
And it features all the jazz greats of the day, Ella Fitzgerald, Count Basie, Duke Ellington, and the very last tune on the B-side is a Miles Davis song called Blue Xmas, To Whom It May Concern, written and vocalized by the great Bob Dorough of Schoolhouse Rock fame.
Right.
And the story of how that song came to be is a fascinating one, and I'm not sure if we have time for the full story, but discovering that song, discovering that record when I was in my early 20s, I collect a lot of different stuff, primarily blues, jazz, and country and western from the 40s to the 70s. And Christmas wasn't something I even paid much attention to until that record sort of fell in front of me, and I stumbled over it, and I saw the name Miles Davis, and I saw the name Bob Dorough, and I thought, what the hell is this? Pardon me. I thought, what the heck is this? I don't know what can this possibly sound like? I was so excited about it. I'd known a lot about Miles Davis's work and never heard of this song before, and I knew of Dorough, and I thought, what's this combination going to be? Raced home and put it on the turntable, and it just blew my mind. It was the hippest, coolest, most caustic Christmas song I'd ever heard, and the fact of it that was really fascinating to me was that it was a song that was critical of the holiday, couched within an actual Christmas song, and I thought that was so unique and so remarkable and so irreverent that I just thought, okay, if this song exists, there's got to be more like it in the world. And that began my collecting obsession.
Well, let's hear some of it. This is Blue Xmas, To Whom It May Concern, by Miles Davis and Bob Dorough.
Merry Christmas. I hope you have a white one, but for me, it's blue. Christmas, that's the way you see it when you're feeling blue. Blue Xmas, when you're blue at Christmas time, you see right through all the waste, all the sham, all the haste, and plain old bad taste. Sidewalk Santa Clauses are much, much, much too thin. They're wearing fancy rented costumes, false beards, and big fat phony grins. And nearly everybody's standing around holding out their empty hand or tin cup. Gimme, 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 fill my stocking up, all the way up. It's a time when the greedy give a dime to the needy.
What's great it's such so great, but you go looking for Bob and you find him, of course, and he's not hard to find or anything like that, but you go visit him and he does tell you I do want to actually play a clip of because you find Bob and you ask him to tell the story about creating that, and he goes through the story of how he meets Miles, and Miles invites him to do the song. And can I play a bit of this from the film?
Sure. I was just going to say I was so grateful that he was still alive, because when I Googled him, I thought, because I knew Miles was gone and most of the other band members, and yeah. I wanted to speak to the songwriter. And I thought, oh, gosh, how old? This is like around 2007
right.
when I reached out to him, and I thought he's got to be in his 80s. And I hadn't heard much about him in you know, around the last sort of few years. So I thought, oh, gosh. But sure enough, he was alive. I emailed him, and he got back to me the next day, and I was visiting him about a month later. It was remarkable.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear a little clip.
Good.
I answered the phone, and Miles said, Bob, this is Miles. I want you to write me a Christmas song.
What?
Let me see. B, 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 B. Gee, what kind of a song would you write for Miles Davis? It had to be a kind of an alternative. You know, I was that kind of a mind anyway, alternative. I was a beat cat. Just the idea that it was Miles Davis made me think I'm not going to write White Christmas or Jingle Bells or anything like that.
Blue Xmas. When you're blue at Christmas time, you see right through all the sham, all the haste, all the waste, and plain old bad taste.
I love the man. he's so cool.
Well, you know, I have to say, this is one of the great things about this film is you meet a lot of really cool people along the way and introduce them to us.
It took a long, arduous road to get there, but yeah, I'm really pleased with the variety and the depth and just the interviews were so great.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mitch Kezin is with us, of course, directed and produced the film Jingle Bell Rocks. We're screening it next Tuesday night. That's December 23rd at 7 o'clock at the main downtown library in Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Mitch is going to be with us for a Q&A after the film, and there's going to be an after party with DJs spinning alternative Christmas tunes like those in Mitchell's film. We have all of the details about that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take a brief break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Santa, I make my runs about the break of day. They call me back to Santa.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio. Today in the program, we're offering a special holiday edition of our documentary film series. We're talking about Mitchell Kezin's documentary about the vibrant subculture of people who collect Christmas music. Kezin has an obsession himself for the music. It's personal for him, so he made a film where he went looking for people like him. This film is called Jingle Bell Rocks. We're screening it next week, next Tuesday. We'll give you the details about that as we go along. Mitch is joining us today. Here's an email from Ben who writes, as a kid, I grew up listening religiously every Christmas season to the Oak Ridge Boys Christmas album that pretty much everybody else I had ever met just hates. My wife, he says, can't stand the rocking opener Jesus Is Born Today. But every time, he says, I hear that album and that cheesy song in particular, I'm transported back to my youth without actual tinsel hanging on the tree and snow on the ground and stockings full of toys. And isn't that the point, Mitchell Kezin, in many ways, that's what the music seems to be about for a lot of people, is that it connects you to something else, connects you to memory.
Absolutely. It was one of the most remarkable things when I was researching the film. I would speak to total strangers about the idea that I had and the movie I wanted to make, and I would ask them about their favorite Christmas song, and they almost without fail, people who were engaging with the holiday had that one song or that one record that they always had to go to that announced the holiday for them. That was the one unique song or recording that announced the holiday, mm-hmm. that was so tied to their childhoods and their memories of Christmas growing up, and without fail, everyone seemed to have one song, and revealed so much deeply personal revealed so much of themselves, personal anecdotes and shared memories with me that I wouldn't have ever thought possible, speaking to a stranger for 5 minutes. It was really something else.
I want to play a clip from the film because among the people that we meet along the way is Wayne Coyne, of course, of the Flaming Lips. He, in this clip, says something. He, along, by the way, I should mention, along with David Wisdom, who is a Canadian radio icon, is how you describe him.
Very much so.
Very much so. He describes how this kind of music is related to ritual and how it transports you back. Let me play another clip from Jingle Bell Rocks. This is David Wisdom and Wayne Coyne.
People like to hear the same thing at Christmas that they've heard before, because that's what Christmas is about. It's about repeating the same thing. It's about marking the year. It's about traditions. It's about rituals.
We didn't have lots of Christmas records. I think there was a few around the house, you know. But you mostly heard Christmas music at Christmas time. And so, you know, the music and the memories and all the experiences are all, you know, they're all combined. So as you get older, you know, you hear a certain Christmas song by Andy Williams and you're transported back in time. It's probably to some joyous thing. And that pierces that pathway. You know, it goes directly back. You know, that's what that type of music does.
To remember our childhood, to understand where we came from and why we're here, there's nothing like music for evoking memories of the past.
From Mitchell Kesson's film, Jingle Bell Rocks.
I was just going to mention, you know, you can't envision the holiday without the music or the music without the holiday. It's just
right.
they're so inseparable. And that's kind of unique. There isn't another sort of celebration that has so many songs connected to it that are so integral to the experience of the holiday, in my mind anyway.
Yeah. Well, let me play a clip from Bill Adler, who you include in the film. I think he puts it almost best. Here's another clip, Bill Adler from Mitch Kesson's film.
You know, not to get negative about it, but I think that Christmas for most folks is about tradition. People like what's familiar over and over again. It spells Christmas to them. So, you know, that record, you know, means the same thing to you as, I don't know, a Christmas fruitcake or something. It's a kind of food you wouldn't eat any other time of year, but if they put it in front of you at Christmas, you're going to eat it and you're going to say, wow, my mom used to make something like this.
I think people feel conflicted, don't you think, Mitch, about about it?
Sure.
On one hand, they have strong affections and they love it. On the other hand, some of them hate it. And you don't bypass that part of the film. I mean, that is part of it too, don't you think?
Absolutely. I was conflicted for years and years. I probably was collecting for at least 5-7 years before I shared any of it with anyone. As I say in the movie, I was in the Christmas closet, not feeling comfortable sharing this weird obsession. I thought I was the only one in the world doing it, you know, foolishly. But I mean, people have a knee-jerk reaction to the words Christmas music. And that's because most of us aren't aware of the depth and the variety and just how much of it is not ever heard. And I always wondered why that was. I could never figure it out. Mm. I still don't quite figure it out. I can't quite figure it out. But now with, you know, music blogs and, you know, college radio, and there's so many more places where you can find this stuff, it's starting to become a little more, a little easier to discover it. But that just makes our jobs more challenging.
One of the things you explore in the film is kind of how Christmas music, as we've come to now know it, how it evolved. Christmas songs, of course, and this is one of the things that, you know, a lot of the collectors point out in the film, they're revenue generators for singers, for a lot of them. And you can make good money off of this racket. Maybe I shouldn't put it that way. But, I mean, you can come back to this music every season. So it makes sense for people to, whether they're Christian or whether they're believers at all, you see a lot of people making these kinds of albums. And one of the points that I wanted to ask you about, and you point this out, is that the biggest selling Christmas songs of all time are written by Jewish men. Did you ever figure out why that was? I mean, you do kind of get at that a little bit in the film, but it's pretty interesting, I think.
Oh, it's fascinating. It's actually the subject of a new film I'm starting, the untitled Jews and Christmas movie, because 75% of classic chestnuts, from White Christmas to Silver Bells to you name it, have been written by Jewish songwriters during the era of great, you know, Tin Pan Alley songwriting. And I guess it's because they have, you know, a removed perspective from the holiday, mm-hmm. perhaps a longing. I mean, there's a fascinating book called White Christmas, Story of an American Song, written by a fellow named Jeffrey Rosen. Mm-hmm. Wonderful, wonderful book. I recommend it to anyone. And it's a great Christmas gift too. He wrote it about 8 years ago. It goes into the whole history of that song and the backstory, which is absolutely fascinating. And Berlin was actually someone who kind of wished he could engage in the holiday and wasn't able to. That was his sort of point of view, among other themes that he wrote about. But, getting back to the whole idea of Christmas as a revenue generator or music, you know, a moneymaker, there was a time back in the 50s and 60s where recording a Christmas album was kind of a musical rite of passage for an artist. You know, Elvis Presley's Christmas record was his fourth or fifth, I think, and you would have to have really established yourself as an artist before the record label would even consider having you create a Christmas album. But when they did come to you, and Sinatra, Ella Fitzgerald, this is true to their entire oeuvre, that happened. And it speaks to the quality of the songs that they recorded. Whereas now, I mean, we're back into this singles market where it's anyone with a computer and some skill with a guitar and a good voice can record their own song, mm-hmm. put it up on CD Baby or wherever, and hope that it catches on. But there are literally every year thousands of these being released, and many being released in haste and not very thoughtful and not very done from my perspective for the wrong reasons. And I haven't found anything lately that has even has grabbed me in any way.
Really? Lately, you mean?
Yeah, no, nothing. And, you know, I search and search. It's not only old songs I'm looking for, but I'd love to find some new ones. And
You kind of get at this, actually, in the film. I mean, David Wisdom is among them who talks about the fact that you know bad, you know, crappy Christmas music when you hear it, and you know the good stuff. And for him, he said identifying the good stuff was about whether it had a heart, right?
Yes. And there's no irony in it at all.
Yeah.
You know, it's sincere. It's speaking to sort of truths about the holiday. That goes back to what you're asking me earlier. When growing up as a teen and then later, I couldn't identify with the songs I was hearing on the radio because they weren't speaking to my personal experience. There was nothing that I heard that I could connect to. And that bothered me. And I started to kind of resent all the stuff I was hearing on the radio. And that also sort of spurred my obsession with trying to find the stuff that did have an impact on me emotionally or you know, intellectually.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Not to get too serious.
Well, there's a group, but this idea of connecting to it, there's a great section in the film where you talk about this song, Santa Claus is a Black Man. And this is really connected to identity. There's a song about Santa being a brown man, and I'm sure there are other versions of that. But this is the kind of connection part. Tell us a little bit about Akeem and Teddy Van, because this is a song from 1973.
Yes, Teddy Van sadly passed away before I had a chance to meet him and interview him. He was very difficult to locate, as was Akeem, his daughter, who was 5 at the time that this record was recorded. It's a full album, but that one song was the one that sort of became a huge underground cult classic and is played every year now, and was the reason why I visited with John Waters in the movie. He put together his own collection of his favorite, as he referred to them, crackpot Christmas carols. They're not all crackpot. Many of them are very, very cool tunes, including Santa Claus is a Black Man, which was written by Teddy Van. And he was a songwriter and an artist who just didn't like the spotlight, and therefore, it was a beautiful looking man and wanted, his label wanted him to become a performer and be on stage and tour, and he just didn't want to have anything to do with it. So his whole career trajectory was rather minimal, and he's not very well known. I think he did receive a Grammy for a Teddy Pendergrass song he wrote, but he was pretty reclusive, and I couldn't find him for years and years. And then I learned about his passing in an obituary, and that's how I found Akeem, his daughter, who we do speak to in the film. And
yeah.
It's a wonderful duet, and there's a, it's a song about a little girl who's remarking about how much her daddy looks like Santa, and the whole black experience of finding an African American Santa Claus to celebrate the holiday with is a huge theme within that song, and also within the interview with Akeem and her mother in the film, and it's a strange song, but lovely harmonies in it. And there's a, I still don't know who the background singer is, but I'd sure like to find out, because she just takes it into the stratosphere with her voice and her vocalizing.
Yeah.
It's a really soulful tune. And as are all the, there's a lot of really cool Kwanzai songs on the record. And it's a album that I wish could be re-released somehow.
Well, let's play a bit of it. Santa Claus is a Black Man, Akeem and Teddy Van. I want to ask about, I have to say, my favorite song, I think my favorite song in the film, and I had never heard it before, was a Clarence Reed song from 1974 called Winter Man. And what's great about this.
One of my favorites, too.
Is it? Yeah, because
pardon me,
this
yeah.
is Andy Searson, who's in the, he's a collector, plays a prominent role in the film. He's terrific. He finds this piece at a flea market, pays a dime for it. Would you say something about that? Because I wanted to play some of this. I think it's a great song.
It's an amazing tune and one of my favorites too. And I discovered after we, you know, featured that song in the movie and then we secured the rights to it and all the rest, that Clarence Reed is Blowfly. And how he became this, I don't know if your listener, many of your listeners may not know who Blowfly is, and it's too X-rated to talk much about him, but I don't know how it's so sad to me that he ended up as this crazy Blowfly character recording all these really, really nasty X-rated albums, the names of which I couldn't possibly speak about on air. But he's such a gifted songwriter, and his vocalizing is just so powerful. It's just a soulful, bluesy, amazing tune. And I was so happy when... Andy referenced that one when we did that interview, and I found the song through him, and I'm looking for more from that period from Clarence's career. But that was early on, and I guess somehow he just didn't get the support, and or who knows. I thought about interviewing him in the film, but I knew I'd have to interview him as Blowfly, and I didn't want that character in my movie.
Yeah.
So I just thought, let's just play the song and let people hear that, how good it is. And yeah, it's a, as Andy says, it's a stone cold classic.
I hear that cold wind blowing through the limbs and the trees, and as I stare out of my
my window. I can see the falling of the leaves. Hello, old man Winter. I've been kind of expecting you. I have my woman here beside me, so there's no harm you can do. I feel sorry for the people you catch alone, with no love to call their own. 'Cause only love can keep them out of your hands. You mean old winter man.
Terrence Reed, song Winter Man. We're talking to Mitch Klein. He's the director and producer of the documentary film Jingle Bell Rocks, which we're screening next Tuesday. That's the 23rd at 7 o'clock at the Main Library in downtown Salt Lake City. It's part of our Through the Lens series, our partnership with the Utah Film Center. Mitch is going to be with us for a Q&A after the film. You can find out all the details on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. We'll take another break. Back in a moment. You're listening to Radio West on KUER.
Keeps me all wrapped up. I even use a little bit of sugar to sweeten the coffee in my cup.
This is Radio West. I'm Doug Fabrizio, back now with Mitchell Kezin. We're talking about his documentary film, Jingle Bell Rocks, which we're screening next Tuesday, that's December 23rd, at 7 o'clock in the Main Downtown Library in Salt Lake City. Mitch is going to be on hand for a Q&A after that. I should also mention that there's going to be a party. KRCL is partnering with all of this, too. They're going to have DJs there spinning alternative Christmas tunes like those in Mitch's film. Again, there's details about all of that on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Mitchell Kezin is joining us from the studios of member station WCPN, IdeaStream in Cleveland. He's on film tour. This caught my eye. I wanted you to maybe say something about that. This is from the band Low? And I'll tell you why it caught my eyes, obviously, or caught my ear anyway, is there's a reference to the fact that there was a really popular EP that they released in 1999, this band, and apropos of the fact that we're in Utah, they're Mormons, or I guess they were anyway.
Oh, they still are.
Still are, okay.
Who were the first independent band to really take Christmas music seriously, and that album that they recorded and released was one of the first that I came across when I started looking for more contemporary Christmas records and songs by bands that I loved. And I was lucky to film them in concert. They re-released the record 3 years ago and did a small West Coast tour, and I met with them in Seattle where they did a show at the Tractor Tavern and recorded the show, and I did some interviews with them. In the movie, you don't hear those interviews. You hear a radio show they did with KCRW instead. But they're very, devoted Mormons and have a really, all their songs are quite spiritual. And their take on Christmas, their most, well-known Christmas song, Just Like Christmas, is not particularly spiritual, but the rest of the songs on the record are, and we featured one called Long Way Around the Sea, which harkens back to very early Christmas carols.
Yeah. Can I play a moment of that?
Yeah, I'd love that.
Yeah.
See you.
really pretty.
Oh, that's beautiful. Yeah. Alan Sparhawk, amazing.
You know, so here's another thing that's great about the film, though. So you have songs like this, images like this, and then there's this contrast where we shift gears, and then you start hearing the goofier songs, which I do want to say something about, because the film is a lot about that. And I just wrote down some of the titles. My favorite is Christmas in My Pants, but I Want the South to Win the War for Christmas. I Saw Mommy Spanking Santa Claus. Death Might Be Your Santa Claus. Christmas Piggy. Santa on a Nuclear Missile. I mean, there's a lot of goofy stuff out there, too.
Oh, yeah. It's a big part of the holiday, of course. And I couldn't not include the great Dr. Demento in the film.
Yeah.
If folks buy the DVD, there's a really great extended scene with him that we sadly had to cut from the main feature. But it was wonderful spending time with him. And, you know, there's a place for humor in Christmas music, obviously. And he made me aware of some of those songs, as did some of the other collectors who are featured in the film. And the whole song poem genre, which is where the Heather Noel song Santa Claus Came on a Nuclear Missile comes from. That whole genre is a fascinating world that I knew I needed to touch on in the film. I wanted to have a little balance, you know?
Yeah. And, of course, a big part of this is collectors that you meet along the way. Again, as you say, you were sort of in the closet for a while, and then you found these kindred spirits all throughout all throughout North America. I'm sure they're everywhere. But say a little bit more about what it's like when you're looking. What do you know exactly what you're looking for when you wander into an old record shop or a flea market or something like that? Are you looking for something in particular?
Well, up until recently, no. As Andy says in the film, it's about, you know, discovering the unknown, coming across something that you didn't know existed. But there are, over time, as you're collecting records, there are signifiers, you know, that you can kind of zone in on how small the label is, where the label is from. You know, a lot of these greatest records that I've come across have been recorded by labels, tiny labels in the South or in Tennessee or Arkansas. And so you start to recognize the particular labels, the record labels, or, you know, looking for a song that has something to do with Christmas in it. The words Yuletide is one that I love, anything that says Yuletide in it. So it's about the combination of the song title, the artist's name, and the label itself. And you kind of just, I didn't used to travel with a portable record player. It would have saved me a lot of money, so I do now. But, you know, just digging for those undiscovered treasures is what it's really, is the exciting part of it, and makes those hours fly by, for me anyway. And then I was going to say, there is one record I am trying to find now, and I've discovered it through a DJ here in Cleveland when I was here in March at the film festival. It's a Jimmy McGriff recorded two Christmas albums. This is one of them that I'd never seen before. It's called Christmas Time at the Organ with Jimmy McGriff. And it's a 6-song EP with some really strange little tracks on it. Nothing like it is on his other more well-known record called Christmas with McGriff that's very widely available. This one is a small label, early 60s, and has some crazy titles like Yuletide Ring Ding-a-Ling, but really funky Hammond B3 organ tunes. That's the one I'm desperately trying to find now. And I don't know a single collector who's ever seen it. It seems my friend Tom Rappa, who I met in March, and he played this at a little pre-party we had for the film. He seems to own the only copy that exists. So I'm one day I hope to find that.
Yeah.
That, to me, that's my new holy grail.
Yeah, yeah.
Prior to that, it was the Free Design.
We have to mention, because it plays a good part in the film. I mean, so mention who this is. This is a group that, this particular, and I want to play a little excerpt from this song, Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas, from 1968. And this is when you kind of talk about how these songs are reflections of the time. This comes out as a kind of, this was the 60s, the late 60s, so the war in Vietnam was going on. There was, like there is always, this sense of you know, a response to commercialism, these kinds of things. So how did the Free Design thing come up?
Well, I first learned about them through Andy Serzan, who turned me on to their very strange one-sided Christmas album, which, oh man, the whole story is told in the movie, but yeah. In a nutshell, Chris Dedrick, the Free Design were a band who had a really brief five-year period in the late 60s into the early 70s of fame, and they were out of the gate. They were hugely popular and recorded, I think, six or seven albums and just a handful of these Christmas songs. And the Christmas songs themselves were recorded as part of a United Air Force recruitment Christmas LP. And that whole story is incredibly ironic and strange, and how a peace-loving band from the late 60s ended up with their songs on the B-side of a Air Force Army band Christmas record is just a crazy, crazy story, but in and of itself. But the songs themselves by Chris Dedrick, their family band, two sisters, two brothers. Again, sadly, Chris Dedrick had passed away of cancer before I had a chance to meet with him. But we do speak with his widow, Moira Dedrick, and his sister, Sandra, who was in the band. And they tell the whole story of how these Christmas songs came to be. But their music is described as sort of Baroque pop or sunshine pop. And they're much more known by musicians than they are fans, although they have a fairly big cult following. A lot of their stuff has been re-released by Light in the Attic Records out of Seattle, thankfully. But these Christmas songs have never, ever been released. And so the estate, the Dedrick estate, were very kind to me and allowed us to use all of the songs in the film. And Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas is probably their most popular and most well-known, which talks kind of about just paying closer attention to those directly around you and keeping your mouth closed and just experiencing the holiday together, and hints at the commercialization of the holiday and what's important about it. And Chris Dedrick is a beautiful lyricist and real deep thinker, and his song Shepherds and Wise Men harkens back to, you know, the early days of the holiday. Are you going to play one of these?
Yeah, I want to play Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas.
Okay,
because it is kind of weird on some level.
It is, yes, absolutely.
But in the great way. Here it is, the Free Design. Close Your Mouth, It's Christmas.
Close your mouth except to say, might get something happening. This season has a secret joy that some are missing. We could all find it if we just watch the sun. Put your big bang foot back in the drawer. Bring your mind and body back from the store. Get to know the people in your house. You might like them. Christmas means a million magic things to those who try to let it be its magic self and not a thing to buy. Sit down.
That's so great. I want to play one more. I want to play a clip from Wayne Coyne again of The Flaming Lips, because he's again featured in the film. Because he sort of gets at this idea. There's a terrific song, A Change at Christmas, that they did. Say It Isn't So. And he references this in this clip from the film, the idea of that you can change your opinion, because your attitude changes at Christmas, he says. So why can't you do it at other times? Let me just play this clip from Mitchell Kesson's film, Jingle Bell Rocks. There's Wayne Coyne.
You know, that line, say it isn't so, you know, this idea that we all have this change at Christmas. And then the cynical view is, of course, it's just for a moment, then we go back to being our normal selves, you know. If you can do it at Christmas time, why can't you just do it and be that way? You know, why can't you just change? That's just and we see how that's not really a change. You know, it's like, it's just a It's just an idea that people embrace. They don't really change very much at all.
Let me ask you finally, Mitchell Kazin, you say you want the film to come full circle. What do you want to end up in the end?
Well, the goal was to make a feel-good Christmas movie, and I hope that people, you know, not just have their eyes and ears open, but and will be inspired to sort of look a little more broadly at what kind of holiday music is out there. But they also, that they can connect to my story in the film and that can resonate with their own Christmas experiences, because, you know, it's not always joyful and wonderful and magical for people. It's a difficult time for many folks, and it was for me for the longest time as a child, even though, you know, it was a two-sided thing. It was magical and lovely, and I know my mother tried to make it that way, and I have fond memories of the holiday, but I also have some really sad memories of not having my father around and you know, part of the family missing from that experience. So I just hope that that people enjoy the movie and can connect with it. And I've come full circle insofar as I'm no longer haunted by the little boy that Santa Claus forgot. The way the film ends was a joyous experience.
Yeah.
And I'm so grateful for how that turned out.
Mitchell Kazin, he's the director and producer of the film Jingle Bell Rocks. He's going to be involved in the Q&A at our screening next Tuesday night, our partnership with the Utah Film Center at the main downtown library in Salt Lake City. Mitchell Kazin, thank you very much for joining us.
I so appreciate the time. Thank you for the support of the movie.
We'll have details about it, all of this on our website, radiowest.kuer.org. Radio West is a production of KUER News, the program produced by Elaine Clark and Benjamin Bombard. I'm Doug Fabrizio.
Everything changes. Yeah, it's strange how time marches on. Well, maybe there'll be sometime in the future.